This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Ainsley Earhart.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Katie Pavlich, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, May 20th, 2022. I'm Eben Brown. What makes Vladimir Putin so merciless? One author and expert says he merely comes from a long line of brutal communists, and he's emulating who he thinks was the most effective leader the Russian people ever had.
He has been ruthless in consolidating power in Russia. He has eliminated over and over again people exactly as Stalin did a long time ago.
This is the Fox News Rundown, War on Ukraine.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
We have spent many weeks asking why Vladimir Putin is so hell-bent on conquering Ukraine, and most experts say the same thing. He's rebuilding an empire of Russian influence, one he felt was lost when the Soviet Union collapsed. And it is true, he is a brutal butcher. And while evidence of brutality in Ukraine abounds, one man who studies Putin insists the real brutality is much more up close and personal.
And what an oligarch is, even the Russian society is divided tremendously between the rich and the poor. It doesn't have a middle class or as much of a middle class as the United States does.
John O'Neill is a military historian and an author. He's co-written the book The Dancer and the Devil, Stalin, Pavlova, and the Road to the Great Pandemic, and it is very eye-opening. There's a lot more to Vladimir Putin than just being a villain, and it involves those boogeymen, the oligarchs of Russia.
The oligarchs are basically the ones who succeeded to the what were once state enterprises owned by the state itself. And when the state got rid of these in the Yeltsin years, it privatized them. People stepped in. Many of them closely associated with Putin. They're called Silovik, S-I-L-O-V-I-K, and they became immensely wealthy. And they basically made a trade. We'll help you, Putin, and Yeltsin before him, if you will allow us to become immensely wealthy. Now, Russia's economy is almost entirely natural resources. So most of the great wealth was made in the sale of natural gas and in the sale of oil, primarily to Europe and to other places. These are guys that accumulated fortunes of over a half billion dollars, over $500 million essentially in oil and gas and or in some political aspect of it.
So how much influence do they have over someone like Vladimir Putin? From the image that Vladimir Putin has and sort of, again, this image that I think is perpetuated through the media is that he is this all-powerful, all-controlling Russian dictator. But is he influenced by the oligarchs or does he command them? I mean, this is intriguing, I think, for Americans, really, because, you know, especially if you are of my generation or the generation before me, you grew up being scared of the Soviet Union. And you know, we have these mass mediated images of authoritarian cheaters and the evil Soviets and the bad guys in the Rocky IV film and all that stuff. But I don't want to make a joke about it. How much of that really rings true in today's Russia with Vladimir Putin and these oligarchs and the power structure?
These are guys even that helped to put him in power back in 1998 and 2000 and then readily lost any control over him. His mentor was the mayor of Leningrad. His name was Sobchak. And Sobchak was a reformer, helped to get Putin in power. And then Sobchak, after Putin took power, was asked, who is Putin? And he said, Putin is the new Stalin. Within 3 days, Sobchak was dead of a heart attack, and both his bodyguards had simultaneous heart attacks, even though none of them had had a heart attack before. So the oligarchs were all people that helped to get him into power, but they have very little control over this man anymore. This guy has consolidated power, and the people surrounding him are all KGB friends of his. They call themselves the strongmen. Strongmen, none of them were ever in a battle, but they're strong in, as you can tell, in the Ukraine and killing people.
This is sort of frightening because it does sort of teeter on the whole movie villain aspect of it. But it's obviously it's not a movie. These are very real things. These are real people being
control they have.
Yeah.
In the last 7 weeks since the Ukrainian war began, seven different oligarchs have supposedly committed suicide. The last two supposedly committed suicide while killing their little children and their wives in a bloody, horrible way with axes.
Brutal.
Now, they call these Litvinoi murders. These are actually assassinations, staged deaths, staged suicides, sometimes staged natural deaths that are made to look as if they're a suicide or a natural death. But everyone knows that people don't murder their little daughters with an axe, not seven of them. And so these deliver a warning to all the oligarchs. If you oppose what I do, not only will you die, but your wife will die and your little kids will die too. It's a brutal, vicious deal. There have been seven of them in the past 7 or 8 weeks, starting with a family called the Protasenyas, and one in England, one in Moscow, where a guy supposedly shoots himself and his little kids and his wife. And the Moscow police say, oh, it's a suicide murder. Yeah, sure. A long time ago, a defecting guy from Stalin named Kravitsky said, any fool can murder someone. Said, but it takes a true artist to stage a suicide or a natural death. And that's exactly what they did all over the world in the Stalin period. And as our book, The Dancer and the Devil, reflects, he has done it over and over again in Russia. There are so many of them that we had to put their names in an appendix because we couldn't. The book would be 3,000 pages if you tried to cover everybody that this guy murdered. He has a unit called Unit Number 29155, and you can read about it right on Google. It is made up of a series of professional assassins. The people found out finally about them when they tried to assassinate a family called the Scruples in England. They did kill other people with the byproducts of their poison. And unfortunately, they were on for themselves. They were on video, picked them up on video. They saw their Facebook posts. These idiots were posting on Facebook. And from that, the British Secret Service tracked them down. They got the names, the identity of them, and they learned that they had murdered 14 different people in England alone. When Putin was asked about that, is there such a unit? And were they murdering people? He said, no, I have no knowledge of any such unit, but there should be a unit like that. That would be a very good unit for us to have. That was his response.
That's a very frightening thing for a world leader to say. But it sort of confirms this image of the brutal totalitarian communist or maybe post-communist dictator. Russia may not embrace communism as it did during the Soviet Union, but it certainly has not rid itself of the totalitarian nature of the Soviet Union. Something that you could argue is very similar to China. They've embraced world markets, but they are still quite brutally totalitarian.
They believe that they're on a stage that they'll be able to be communist eventually, but they just sort of have to use capitalism. It's very important to understand with Putin, his background. His grandfather was Stalin's cook and taster. His father was an exterminator for the KGB in the Ukraine. It was all the army through the Ukraine and shoot people in the back of the head during World War II and after World War II. He has often stated his admiration for Stalin. He thinks Stalin was a great man, that the collapse of the Soviet Union was one of the great tragedies of human history, for which he blames the United States. He blames us, even you and me. And that's who he is. And he has been ruthless in consolidating power in Russia. He has eliminated over and over again people exactly as Stalin did a long time ago.
We've been speaking with author John O'Neill. He's written a book, Dancer and the Devil, Stalin, Pavlova, and the Road to the Great Pandemic. On the Fox News Rundown, War on Ukraine. We'll have more with John straight ahead. And I suspect that it makes it hard for anyone with any kind of influence in Russia to maybe persuade him to either call off this war in Ukraine or rethink it in some way to perhaps maybe make it less brutal against Ukrainians, to find a good exit strategy at this point, because the war hasn't gone terrifically well for them. This was not a major victory. It might be a slow slog, and in some way they might wear down the Ukrainian military and fighters and people. But this was not the quick, we're going to run in there and plant a flag in Kiev and reclaim lost Russian territory. And it looks like, from what you're telling me, that no one really has a good voice or way of convincing him otherwise. And if they did try that, they might end up with themselves and their family dead.
In 1953, Joseph Stalin was preparing an awful lot of evidence, now shows, for the use of nuclear weapons in the West. And his underling, a man named Beria, poisoned him to death. And that's the reason why we kind of live in the world we live in right now. This guy has a whole variety of weapons that nobody's seen yet. He brags about them. He brags about what he calls his special weapons. These are bioweapons. He has weaponized in terrible diseases. And the way he sees, of course, he knows there's a nuclear stalemate. But his view of the world is, if things go really bad, somebody goes into Kiev or they go into Kansas and they cough even. And when they cough, all of a sudden people get sick. One out of every 5 days in the Soviet Army is spent preparing for biological warfare. And so pushed to the limit, the terrible risk with this guy is biowarfare and chemical warfare. And he is a terrible risk for doing it because he has no conception or belief in human values.
John O'Neill, you're an author. You've written Dancer and the Devil. You've written it with Sarah Wynn, who is sitting next to you. Let's talk a little bit about the book in case people would like to pick up this and read more of your work and learn more about this topic. Tell me about Dancer and the Devil. Why did you write it? And what is your hope that people will get away, come away from it after they've read it?
Dancer and the Devil begins with Stalin's creation of a thing called Laboratory One. Laboratory One was a poison lab. The problem Stalin had is he had to get rid of people like Putin does secretly without anybody knowing that he was getting rid of them. And he poisoned the greatest dancer in the world, Anna Pavlova, the greatest dancer of all of human history, poisoned, used as a rat in a poison lab, Wallenberg, one of the only two people ever to be an honorary U.S. citizen, a man that saved 100,000 Jews in Hungary, and many others, Gorky, and there's a list of them. He then decided to move from retail poisons into wholesale bioweapons, and he began those at a place called Saratov in Russia, and they leaked in 1939 and killed people, as described in the book, in Dancer and the Devil. Those bioweapons expanded in the Soviet period, and they've been exploded under Putin. They also went to China. China has 14 bioweapons labs, military bioweapons labs. The largest of those is in Wuhan, China. And the book makes a very strong case, I believe, I think a conclusive case, that the military bioweapons lab in Wuhan, China, leaked COVID-19 virus in the course of vaccine tests. It has a great deal of information in it that was hard to get hold of, and that is actually right there. The reason people need to read the book is for three reasons, really. There are two very, very evil people even in the world. One is Putin, we're seeing him right now, and the other one is Xi in China. These are ruthless Marxists who idealized Stalin. And the second thing people need to know is that they are armed with what they describe as special weapons, bioweapons, and we're largely defenseless. We didn't even do a good job on COVID-19.
Now, I want to ask you about your yours and Sarah's research into this book, because you were telling me about something that happened that's quite mysterious. Yeah. If the two of you can sort of give me the nutshell of this story, because it kind of reads like a spy novel. You were working on journalistic material, if you will. You were writing a book that was well researched. And like anyone doing their job these days, no matter what that job is, you're making use of modern technology, specifically the cloud, to do your computing, to do your work, to store, the progress of your work. And when we use cloud technology, we sort of like to feel that it's secure and that it's not easily accessed by people who we don't want to see it, whether it's our family photos or important personal documents, the insurance policy for our homes, whatever the case might be. But in this case, it was the research for your investigative work. And tell me what happened.
I'm just going to give you the book has 650 footnotes. Some of the information from the book came from people who are ex-Chinese and Russian expatriates, and a few still in China and Russia. So we've sealed, of course, who they are, although we everything in the book is sourced. Now go on.
Right. So this is information coming from a very prime source that perhaps someone doesn't want disseminated. So go ahead. And tell me what happened.
So I had gone to just about every website I could find reading about the origin of COVID, et cetera. And I didn't have any kind of protection on my computer. So my IP address must have been flagged. And I first noticed that an art website that I run wholly separate and apart from the book was getting attention from Wuhan and Shanghai repeatedly, which was odd because my galleries are in the Southeast. I don't have any clients in China. So that got my attention. And then a short time after that, I opened the book in the morning to begin working on it and noticed it had been opened at 4 a.m. Well, John didn't even have access to the manuscript. I was the only one who did, and I wasn't on it at 4 a.m. So again, that got my attention. We contacted the FBI. They advised we hire a computer forensic expert, which we did. We handed over my hard drive, my Wi-Fi passwords, cloud passwords. And then in the course of him doing this, it happened again. This time I opened it in the morning to begin working on it. And the previous probably six versions were deleted from the cloud. I would always save them by a date. And the previous six versions have been deleted. Fortunately, I'd saved it on a flash drive, so we didn't lose all of that work. And fortunately, we didn't have any of our sources' names on there. But our expert was able to determine the breach occurred in the Apple iCloud. And so, no, I don't feel like the cloud is as safe as I used to think that it was.
We asked him, who was it? He said that in the world, there are only two people that have the ability to penetrate the Apple cloud, the Chinese, whom he described as owning the cloud, and the Russians. And so because of all the hits on Sarah's website coming from Wuhan and Shanghai, we're convinced that that our material first was accessed and then was destroyed by the Chinese. They didn't count on was that we had hard drives.
Well, and even now, even we rose, I believe, to number seven, the 17 best-selling book, we expected to see reviews on Amazon, and people started sending us screenshots. They were verified purchasers, but the message said, due to the content of this review, only verified purchasers can leave messages. So somehow we were getting, regulated through Amazon as well. So there's been a lot to try to suppress this book.
But I don't think that Putin and Xi like the book, even. I don't think they're fans, and they shouldn't be, because we're not their fans.
Well, John O'Neill, Sarah Wynn, thank you so much for being with us on the Fox News Rundown, War on Ukraine.
Thank you, Evan.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.